Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getFargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank N.A. member FDIC.
Progressive presents Adjusting to the Suburbs. You just bought a home in the suburbs, but no one told you about all the birds, specifically this one, who seems to be calling out Roy. Roy. But who exactly is Roy? And why doesn't he ever respond? Maybe Roy is just bird speak for save with Progressive by bundling your home and auto. I guess until Roy answers, we'll never know. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Coverage provided in service by affiliates and third-party insurers.
Today's show is sponsored by Lakehouse Coffee and the Atlanta Coffee Supply Group, Atlanta's premium full-service distributor of hand-roasted coffee, premium iced tea, brewing equipment, and supplies for the hospitality and food service industry. Featuring proprietary brands like Lakehouse Coffee and Blue Durango Iced Tea. I've been drinking Lakehouse Coffee every morning and loving it. You know me, I don't bullshit, I wouldn't say stuff like that if I didn't like it. You may already be enjoying their brands of coffee and tea at Atlanta restaurants like Wahoo, South City Kitchen, Gusto, Dantana's, and many more. If you're a proprietor or decision maker in the restaurant or food service industry, reach out to these guys and start carrying these brands. If your favorite spot doesn't carry Lakehouse Coffee or Blue Durango Iced Tea, get on it and tell them the Atlanta Podcast sent you. Go to lakehousecoffee.com to check out all the restaurants they're currently being served at and learn more about them. That's lakehousecoffee.com.
Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Mappy Davis. So glad you're listening. Thanks so much. If you're new to the show, welcome. If you've been listening for a while, also welcome back. I want to give a quick shout out, speaking of which, to two listeners who actually checked in with me. I said, hey, check in with me. I'd love to hear from you. And guess what? These two did it, and I couldn't be happier. First up, Jimmy Duncan, thanks so much for dropping a note. I really appreciate it. He says the Katie Kylie episode is what snagged him, and then he's hung in ever since. Thanks so much, Jimmy. And then Patrick Blake, my old buddy Patrick Blake. I met Patrick years ago, totally randomly. Don't want to get into the whole story right now, but was so happy to hear that he found the show. And he and I might have something up our sleeves in terms of future guests about the show. I don't want to say anything just now. But please stay tuned. Hate the vague booking, hate the vague talking, but hey, that's all I can say for now. On today's program, Joel Iverson, Monday Night Brewing. I almost said Monday Night Brewery. It is the Monday Night Brewery, but it's also the Monday Night Garage, so Monday Night Brewing is the proper name, I suppose. We get into a lot of good stuff. I'm not a beer guy, as you'll find out, but that didn't stop us from having a great, great chat. I mean, I used to be a beer guy. Anyhow, you know me, I don't like to get into the whole blah, blah, blah. Let's just go to it. It's a great chat. He and I, me and him, away we go.
Okay, so where did you grow up? That's the easy one to start with.
Yeah, Tokyo, Japan.
Okay.
So,
what's your last name?
Iverson.
Okay.
I'm not Japanese. We moved over there originally. My dad was in the military, and he went over there first in the military, and then actually we ended up staying over there. My parents, my mom runs a school. My dad works with Japanese churches over there, and I came back to America when I was 16, but they still live over there. So.
And you speak fluent Japanese?
I can still get by speaking it. My reading and writing's pretty rusty at this point just because I've been away from it for so long.
And where did you come?
So I came to, I'm from Tokyo, which is a metropolitan area of 40 million people, to finish high school in Waynesboro, Virginia, of 18,000 people.
Which is famous for?
There's a DuPont plant there.
Okay.
And it's kind of right in the Blue Ridge Mountains right there, the Shenandoah Valley. Really pretty, but I mean, pretty crazy.
Do you want to sing the song?
Now it's all right. Okay. I was in an a cappella group in college, though. So that
did you have to sing the song?
We did sing the O Shenandoah. Oh yeah, we did that.
What about Almost Heaven?
Yeah, see, we kind of make fun of West Virginia.
West Virginia.
In Virginia. So went to, and then went to college there in Virginia, and then moved to Atlanta after school. So,
did you go to University of West Virginia?
University of Virginia.
Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. UVA.
Right. It's, the Cavaliers.
Cavaliers. Yep.
I'm trying to think if I know anybody that went to UVA. I don't.
Yeah,
other than Ralph Sampson.
Yeah,
are there lots of pictures of Ralph Sampson around the campus?
There are, and there's Thomas Jefferson quotes everywhere.
Oh, he founded it?
Yeah, he founded it. Okay. So it's like, you know, the joke at UVA is that, like, you go into, like, the health center, and there's a Thomas Jefferson quote about being healthy. And, you know, my friends and I, we had this thing in our emails. We would just make up fake Thomas Jefferson quotes.
Nice. They're
very inappropriate most of the time, but right. But it was fun because they're everywhere.
There was someone who was putting Hitler quotes or Mussolini quotes on Taylor Swift memes. And of course people would share them because they think it's Taylor Swift saying them.
Yeah.
I always thought that was good.
Yeah.
And when you're in college studying what?
So I studied economics.
Okay.
Started out kind of engineering and I thought I liked math, but not enough to like do that much math. And,
right.
Ended up switching over to economics and then came to Atlanta after I graduated.
Because you wanted to do what?
Honestly, it was right after 9/11 happened. Like the job market just sort of cratered right then. And I didn't have a job, but one of our friends who we lived with got a job here with Home Depot at the corporate headquarters. And we're all like, let's just go to Atlanta with him and get a house and try to find jobs down there. So we all kind of landed on Atlanta.
And what part of town was that?
That's nice. We lived in a house in Peachtree Hills, right off Peachtree there.
Okay.
So kind of Buckhead-ish house.
And where did you look for work?
So kind of got a job with a little startup. It was a doctor from Emory who had this like antioxidant complex that he had found and was trying to license it to a bunch of nutritional companies. And I was kind of always a super entrepreneurial kid growing up. I would import blow pops to Japan and string tennis rackets and kind of do whatever to
See,
make
I
money.
I hated people so, like you because yeah. I wasn't that guy. I didn't figure out that I could do my own thing till I was like 30.
Yeah.
because I wasn't that. I was like, you know, the kid that did the stuff you're talking about or had like, you know, mowed everybody's lawn and had other kids mowing lawns.
Yeah.
So that's awesome though.
Yeah. So did that and then went to kind of another sort of startup in sort of the same health and beauty space. My wife jokes that I used to sell makeup because one of our companies was a mineral makeup company, and then went to kind of a small consulting firm. And along that path, met a group of guys 12 years ago. We started brewing beer on Monday nights, and eventually quit my job at the consulting firm 5 years ago to kind of jump all in on making beer.
All right. So, now we have to slow down a little
bit. Yeah. That's a lot. That's 15 years in a,
well, but let's focus on the, let's, we can get up to around the time that you decide making beer. Okay. So you had always thought about this. You were a big craft beer fan. Like, where are you like before, kind of slightly before that? And P.S. by the way, we'll just go ahead and get this out. Like I'm sober.
Yeah. Okay. But I did bring you some beer.
I figured you might, and I almost said you shouldn't, but then I was like, you know what? I'll give it to people here. Yeah. They'll be thrilled.
Yeah.
Right? I have many friends who work in this building. I will give a gift to them. They'll be thrilled. And of course I'll shout you out. So I do not know an awful lot about beer, but I know that you and I can still talk about business and a million things around that. But I just thought I'd go ahead and get that out of the way that I'm not a drinker. So there might be things I don't understand. Because when I got sober, it was 1999, and I think the most invented thing at that time, like the latest thing was like ice beer maybe, was like, hey, you know, I think, right, like maybe Sweetwater existed, but I didn't live in Atlanta yet anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was just, you go to the bar, and there was Bud or Bud Light. So I want to talk to you some about that stuff. But anyhow, so what was your thing?
Of how I got into the
beer. What made you decide to want to brew beer?
So So it actually wasn't, I was not a huge craft beer fan. I was not one of these guys that, honestly wasn't even a huge drinker, period. And I had just, me and a few guys had just started this. We didn't know each other that well. We started this 6 a.m. Friday morning Bible study, and we didn't know each other that well. My wife had gotten me a home brewing kit. And
how is this not a more famous story? Okay. That the Bible study launches
turned brewery,
yeah. Launches the brewery. That's awesome.
Yeah. So really we were looking for a way to hang out outside of Friday mornings at 6 a.m. I got in this home brewing kit and I was like, hey, how about we try like brewing a batch of beer? My wife just gave me this home brewing kit. And so really, at the heart of it, it was about just community and hanging out. We got together on a Monday. We brewed a batch of beer. Celebrate Jesus, you know, basically the first batch I would say was drinkable is about all we could say, but we were like, you realize there's not many times, when you kind of have just a shared activity like that, where you're brewing a batch of beer. It's a Monday night. There's not much else going on. You're kind of, and it's just a way to hang out. And that's what we kind of realized and just kind of kept doing it every Monday.
And what's the alcohol content of like one of these basic home brew kits?
Like 6%.
I mean, first in a regular beer.
So, I mean, the big macro beers might be closer to like, 4.5%, sometimes 3.5%. And then, you know, craft beers, we like to push the limits in true American fashion.
Yeah.
So there's like the legal limit in Georgia is 14% for beer. And, you know, we just made a beer that was 13.9. So
rock on, bro. Yeah. But you still, it's a big, so first of all, how many partners do you have?
So I have two business partners.
Right. And are you the president or just the most interesting to talk to?
No, I am. I'm kind of the operations get it done guy / actually probably the most interesting is my business partner, Jonathan, who's the creative marketing guy, but he's the most interesting, but he doesn't always like to talk to people. So, you know, I enjoy talking to people more.
Right. I'd rather get the person that wants to talk to people than the person who doesn't. It's still a pretty big leap, dude. So you gotta you had to have had some serious, you know, friend chats and wife chats and hey, we really want to go for this, and right?
Yeah. It was pretty scary. I mean, we got to the point where we said, all right, we're gonna, so we basically did the home brewing for almost 6 years. So it was brewing the batches, refining our recipes, kind of looking at what a business plan would look like. And then,
were you selling it to your friends or just giving it to them?
No. Yeah. Cause I mean, alcohol's super regulated. So
but you could have a party and charge a Evite. But you didn't do that.
We didn't do that. We just invited people over on Mondays to taste it and had, you know, it grew to, you know, on a Monday we'd have 30 to 80 people show up just kind of drinking the beer, hanging out. And it became this, I mean, it was fun to make the beer. It was fun to work on the recipes, but it was also, it was just a neat place of people from kind of various sectors of the city, like showing up and you know, neighbors. And
so the Atlanta landscape, what year is this?
So this is 06 that we started.
So this is all, again, like I probably don't know, but like my off the top of my head, there's of course Sweetwater and then Red Brick, Red Roof. What's the other one?
Red Brick. So Sweetwater, Red Brick, and then Terrapin in Athens. There's basically three breweries in the
state. And did you reach out to those people?
Talked to all of them. So,
and were they all agreeable?
Yeah, that was a crazy thing coming from my prior business, is like everyone in the industries I was in before, people like hold really tightly to their secrets and they don't really share anything. I remember sitting down with it was my business partner sat down with him the first time, but like the president of Red Brick was like, hey, here's what my P&L looks like, you know, like these are the basic buckets. This is, and a lot of them really shared some pretty honest feedback about how hard it is to be a brewery in this state and how we've got the most, you know, the most difficult laws if you're trying to be a brewery, like, And so they gave us a lot of good data points. I mean, one of them shared about how he kind of took on some really not so great investors and how it really shaped his course of his business and how he wishes he would have found the right investors the first time. So it was really cool to hear all those different perspectives from people that you're essentially saying, hey, I might want to be your competitor, and yet they're sharing all that information.
Yeah, and I'm someone that believes that way, and I've always reached out, and then when people ask me and they want to make introductions, like, I'm kind of the same way.
Yeah.
Sharing a P&L is a new level that I have not yet heard. For those who are paying attention, or for those that aren't familiar, so that's profit and loss. It's a very basic, here's where the money comes in, here's the money goes out.
Right.
And that's really huge. That's really huge information that can help. And I'm glad to hear that, by the way. I'm glad to hear, I mean, the craft brewery, that is kind of the vibe, though, right? Like, hey, man,
we're competing against the big guys.
Right.
Yeah.
So was the West Midtown location, that was the first actual location?
That was the first actual location.
And you were ahead of the West Midtown curve.
Yeah.
Right? Much like you are now in the West End, which we'll get to, because that's where I live, by the way.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that?
I gleaned that from one of your podcasts.
Like, so. I could throw a rock at you. I've watched you.
White Street?
Yeah.
But the residential White Street, not the commercial White Street, which is so confusing that they're two blocks.
Yeah. What, my wife and I, after 3 years of living in the West End, call it White Street Industrial.
Yeah.
But see, here's the other thing. And again, we'll get to this, but just real quickly, you know, there's the Beltline on the street, and then there's the real Beltline that they're finishing now. And so if you're standing on the Beltline, looking down at like the painted bridge where the Tiny Doors thing is now, like, which one is it, upper and lower? Is it old and new?
Alt Beltline, you know?
Right? Have you thought about these things?
Yes.
Me too.
Confusing.
Did you get investors, or the three of you guys had enough money to get that space, or how does that all work?
We were not that wealthy. We basically got about 30 sort of friends, family, random business associates to invest money. We raised about $1 million from that, and then we got about $2 million on an SBA loan.
That's pretty sweet.
It's a lot. Yeah. Well, it's sweet until, like, you go to sign the papers and you're like, I pledge my house, I pledge my children. I had to keep having kids just to make up the collateral we needed for the bank.
How many kids do you have?
I have four boys.
Dude,
four
young boys, I have three.
Yeah.
Now we're really going to get along.
I know. So
people with two or less kids, they're inferior.
They don't understand.
That, right?
They don't understand the.
And you don't even look that old, dude. How old are you?
I am 36.
Okay.
So
you start having kids at what age?
29. So they're 7, 5, 3, and 1.
We gotta hang out, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I don't really bring my kids to the brewery, though. It's, again, not really my scene. But I know people
come
do.
Come down, let them run on the Beltline. You know.
No, we do that. We do that. When it gets warmer, maybe I'll come over. If you're gonna be there, are you usually there?
I'm there a lot. I kind of jump back and forth between the two spots.
I got an SBA, but it was only a credit. It was only a line of credit. It was only 15 grand. Because my credit wasn't very good. So you guys got 2 million. That's nice.
Yeah. So we kind of, at that point, and really a lot of what shaped why we needed so much money was Georgia was the state where you could only sell beer through a distributor. You couldn't actually sell out of your brewery. And so it was kind of this go big or go home. You got to build a big enough brewery that you can ramp quickly, make enough beer so that you can get
that a distributor wants to take you on.
Exactly.
But here's what so how does that even work? Because, and again, let's try to explain it to folks, right? So when your local bar, I'll explain it. Oh man, we're almost low on batteries. I'll explain it the best I think, and then you can correct me.
Yeah.
Your local bar is not getting beer from Budweiser. They're getting it from one of two, I think, big Atlanta ones.
Correct.
What are they called again?
Distributors, Atlanta Beverage and Eagle Rock, are the two big Budweiser distributors here in Atlanta.
And that distributor is going to carry a bunch of beers.
Correct.
Some craft beers, some big beers, blah, 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 blah. They come and drop it off and whatever. And if you're going to have a festival, same thing. If you're going to have a festival, you got to get it through the distributors. So how does that work when you're actually the venue that people are buying it at and drinking it from?
Right. So that, up until 5 months ago, basically we couldn't legally sell just beer at our breweries. You had to buy a tour or a tasting or a pint glass. Originally it was a pint glass, and then we got the law semi-changed three years ago where you could sell a tour.
We being you and the other breweries.
Yeah. Yeah. Spent a lot of time down at the Capitol on that one.
Yeah. So, did you put on a tie?
I put on a bow tie, actually. a bow tie because a guy who got some of the laws changed in South Carolina, he wore a bow tie every day. And he was like, Joel, it's a good way for them to remember you because they have these conceptions about craft breweries. And if you go show up in a bow tie every day and just keep telling your story,
this is great.
It'll get through. And it did eventually. We got through.
So a tour makes sense. Mm-hmm. Hey, we're going to be doing this at this time. But how did you, like, it's like tough to scale that way, right?
Yeah. And it really, you could only charge for a tour and you could only give up to essentially 2 pints of beer included with the tour. And it just sort of, I mean, I was an economics major. It sort of, it defies like economic principles of like, like charging, have a single price for a tour and then everyone gets up to the same 2 pint amount. You can't go over 2 pints, but the person who wants to come in and drink half a pint, like you can't charge them for half a pint. They have to buy the tour. And so that was, you know, that was a big change to just be able to sell beer. I mean, especially at our West End location, you know, we have 8 ounce pours where you can get an 8 ounce beer for $2.50.
So what were you doing? Like, how did you, this wasn't until 6 months ago that you could do this?
Correct. Yeah. So it was, you showed up at the brewery, you paid $12 for your tour and your pint glass and little tickets to go redeem for 6 ounce pours. And, that was kind of the brewery scene in Georgia. It was weird. It was completely different. How would any other state?
I've been to your thing. I've done one of the running events that ended there.
Yeah.
And I've been to Sweetwater because they have events all the time. People aren't just like, that's all they get is the tube. How do they stick around then? Why do they stick around?
They don't. I mean, that's generally what happened is people would sort of drink their 2 pints and then leave basically. And it's sort of, it forced you into sort of a weird, just crazy quasi-business model where you're trying to do this tour system, but it didn't make sense to, you know, have extended hours and a lot of different stuff.
Right. So I don't understand how that's even close to profitable.
No, it was not great. It was not a great system. And I mean, we still got a lot of people that would come to the brewery, but it was, you had this mix of, some people would come and they'd just be like, what the hell? Like, I have to buy a tour. Why can't I just walk up to the bar and buy a beer? And then people that just said, hey, I just want to buy a pint. Like, that wasn't an option. And then people that said, hey, I want to stay here for 4 or 5 hours and maybe drink 3 or 4 pints. That wasn't an option. So it's just a weird, weird system. So,
yeah, I'm sort of flabbergasted.
Yeah. Georgia was the last state to get it changed out of 50 states.
So what was the celebration like amongst you and the other brewery owners when this finally changed?
It was,
were there virtual high fives? Yeah,
there's a lot of that. There was, you know, we, it was a long, you know, drawn out kind of multi-year thing. And we called it a Georgia Beer Day, where we sort of celebrated and all the breweries, you know, did something special. And
so how many have come after you that are still viable?
So now we're up to, I think, 55 licensed breweries in the state. Yeah. Kind of crazy. 55 licensed breweries, and there's like 150 that would like to get started. So,
well, we are in, for better or for worse, the land of, we don't have to wait for the middleman, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's doing a podcast in my own house or launching a beer. I can build a better mousetrap. People like me and what I do, right? Whether that's true or not, right? So I believe the cream always rises to the top, and time is the greatest teller of whatever. So, you know, year one and two success doesn't mean year five and six success.
Yeah.
How many of them like have come to you the same way that people, that you came to other people?
25. I mean, I get it all the time.
And what makes you take their call versus not take their call? Like a Yahoo email address? Mattsbeer@yahoo.com.
It does. I mean, I try to, the same way that so many other people in this industry, like, I mean, I remember when we started homebrewing, we'd send an email to Sam Calgione, who started Dogfish Head big famous brewery, and we're like, hey, can we interview you for our blog? And his wife writes back and she's like, sure. And that's pretty amazing. I mean, we had
what about the Sam Adams guy?
I'm not sure if we reached out to him, but I did. He actually came to our brewery a couple months ago. I got to meet him in person.
That's great.
And it's an industry where all these people that were successful and famous and amazing breweries, like, were just so open and willing to help other people get into it. And so it's sort of a, I feel very compelled to do the same to other people. Sorry, I'm fidgeting.
You know, because again, I just, from my own experience, I mean, I have people who do reach out to me about what I do, and I can usually tell kind of right away, like, I'm happy to talk to this guy for a few minutes, but I know that nothing's going to, this thing is never getting off the ground.
Yeah.
If there's episode one of the podcast, I'll be shocked.
Yeah. Sometimes I tell them, just go read all of our old blog posts. We've got about 600.
Right, right. And that's a great, right? And, you know, that's a great thing. And if they're willing to do the work, then, right?
Yeah.
So you're there, you're doing your thing there in, I assume you got some kind of breaks though for being ahead of the curve in West Midtown. By the way, I don't even call it that. I don't really like that.
I don't either.
What should we call it?
Some people are trying to kind of coin it like Upper West Side, Lower West Side, but I hate that too.
And, right. Cause it sounds like New York and FM.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure yet.
Well, you know, I live in the West End proudly. And when I tell people I live in the West End, many times they go, I love that area.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah. They think I'm talking about The Optimist.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
So, like I said, I assume like did the city give you some sort of like, you're ahead of the curve here? Because what else was over there?
Not much. I mean, and it was, we got a building that's right there by like the Waterworks block north of 17th Street.
And
shockingly, the city was incredibly difficult to work with. I mean, like, they were, not shockingly, I should say, but I mean, it was the first time a brewery had been permitted in the city since Sweetwater and Red Brick, which had been almost 15 years before that.
Right.
And so, I mean, they were like, we don't understand. What are you trying to do here? And, you know, trying to say we're doing a production brewery. It's not a restaurant. It's not a bar. It's a production brewery. And, you know, they didn't have the codes in the system to even be able to set it up. And It was a lot of work. It got a lot better the second time around with, you know.
So how long are you in business before you decide we're going to open a second one?
So five years, a little less than 5 years. So we just had our 6 year anniversary down there in the West End.
And what made you even think that you could? Cause like Sweetwater hasn't done that. They just got bigger, right?
Correct. Yeah. I think it was really we needed more space. We're kind of landlocked where we were. We started looking at, all right, what would that, you know, should we go get a big old barrel aging warehouse? Should we, what's the direction we're going to go? And we ended up kind of, you know, the guy who was doing that development down there, Lee and White, approached us, and my kids go to school with his kids. And he's like, I really want to get a brewery down here. And we thought it was crazy. And then we just started to kind of noodle on it. We're like, all right, well, you know, we try to do a lot as our company, in the mindset of our purpose statement. So our purpose is Monday Night Brewing exists to deepen human relationships over some of the best beer in the country. So it's deepening human relationships, building community, and making good beer. And we kind of started to realize that, all right, this new location in the West End can solve for really kind of both of those things in a unique way. One, like, we think we're pretty good at kind of creating unique, comfortable spaces and inviting people into them. And number two, like, it just gives us the space and the resources and the abilities to kind of do these new, crazy, different, weird beers we're starting to do, and to, you know, expand our barrel aging program and all these things. And really the sort of tipping point, honestly, for me was, I, before we kind of decided on it, talked to some folks who lived in the neighborhood and said, hey, how would you feel about this, about a craft brewery coming into this neighborhood? And a lot of them were like, they're like, could we, I remember one person in the neighborhood, she was like, well, do you think we could have like our neighborhood Christmas party there? And I was like, yeah. I was like, why? And she's like, well, we have like 200 people at our neighborhood Christmas party. There's no house big enough, and there's no location in the West End that will fit it anymore. And I was like, yeah, we can make that happen. She's like, that'd be awesome. We need something like that in the neighborhood. So it was kind of through that lens of our purpose statement. We said, all right, this could actually make sense. There were a lot of people, I would say sort of the North Atlanta crowd. And I'd describe them like, we're going to the West End. They'd be like, wait, where is that? And you start to tell them, you go on Northside Drive, you go past the stadium and you go like another mile and a half. And that's the West End. And they're like, I've never been south of the stadium.
Yeah, Northside Drive. No one has. No. Right.
It was kind of a crazy path that led us there, but one that was we stumbled into something that was very in line with our purpose.
So you heard me speak to Ryan, right? Mm-hmm. So let's bring up the big G word, right?
Yeah.
Because you do know who your new neighbors are going to be. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just remind folks, like, who else is moving into that thing?
Yeah, we've got American Spirit Whiskey, Wild Heaven, a brew pub, a Honeysuckle Gelato is down there. There's a few others that haven't been announced yet, but kind of in this sort of, makers of different food and beverages.
Right.
So, vibe.
Right. And so... how do you think that affects a neighborhood like the West End?
It was crazy. Like after we announced, that we were going in there, all of a sudden, like people changed their real estate listings and said, right down the street from the new Monday night, coming soon. And there was some article on like Redfin or something, this guy who'd been trying to sell this house. We announced, he changed his listing and he sold it for like 40 grand more than he had it like listed for before, literally 2 weeks after we announced it. And I'm like, man, I should have brought some real estate. the bigger thing for me is I believe that we can either, number one, we can't influence everything. But to the extent that we can hopefully be a part of seeing the West End develop in the right way. That's my personal goal. I've got a lot of ideas about that, but it's an interesting time in Atlanta. I mean, like a lot of what you talked about with Ryan, where there's going to be this massive migration of people into the city limits. And yet, I mean, there are so many neighborhoods that are, it's going to be more and more difficult for the people who have lived there to continue living there if we don't do something about it. And there's people that are, I would say that they're a huge part of the fabric of Atlanta. And you think these are people that have said, hey, we want these amenities, we want these services, we want the Beltline. Well, if the Beltline comes to their neighborhood and then they can't afford to live there anymore, it's like WTF,
I mean, I think we're certainly a long way from it looking like this side of town, but it does seem like that is the way it's going. I mean, I don't know what the solution is either, right? Because, mm-hmm. As I said to Ryan, I said, what we have for food now is, Long John Silver's and McDonald's.
Yeah.
And is there something else besides breweries to,
yeah.
Have you been to Lean Draft House?
Yeah.
Are you
a
fan?
I've only been, I don't think I've actually eaten there. I've only just been there to drink basically.
Right.
But yeah, I think they're doing some good stuff there. It seems like,
right.
Have you eaten there?
So, on the neighborhood group page, I'd seen a few complaints and like early days, I give you a lot of, Facebook, I found to be a place where people talk about where they were wronged that day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I give people a lot of space. But we were there after they'd been there like 4 months. And like I sat down on a Sunday and was like, I'm there with my wife and she's eats really clean. So she's going to get a salad, mm-hmm. and my kid's going to eat some chips. And then we'll order tacos. And we get down. They're like, yeah, we don't have any chips. okay, you're a taco place. Like, and the woman said, well, it's Sunday. We really kind of don't know what kind of crowd we're going to get. Like, as that was some kind of decent excuse. And then my wife ordered one of the two salads and they said, we don't have that salad today. And I was like, okay, goodbye. Now, will I never go back? No, because I'm not one of those people that will never go back.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not in a hurry to stop there again. And certainly as more things open, right? Because I have heard similar complaints in the boards in the neighborhood about it. This does bring me to a complaint I have, though.
Okay.
Which I wasn't sure I was going to talk about here.
Let's go. Head on, man.
But I think you can take it. And I think it's a good conversation. So I have a great relationship with your event person. I don't know if she told you.
Shakia?
Yes.
Okay.
I said, hey, I got some runners coming. I'd like to do an event. And can we do food trucks? She's like, no, but we usually have a food vendor. I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
I will. And I had been to your spot a couple Saturdays ago with the Okiaki guy.
Okiaki, yeah. Any awesome?
Awesome. I want to interview that guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I actually found him on Instagram and was going to go to where he was where he was. And then I was like, oh, you're coming to Monday Night Garage. I'll see you there. So I spoke to her the day before the event. She said, talk to me the day before. And I said, I'm bringing people. I want to, you know, you said to get remind you to get someone there sort of early because you don't open until one, but they can get there early, blah, blah, blah. And I said, and who do you have food comping? And she said, well, it's so-and-so if they show up. And that troubled me for obvious reasons. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, well, sometimes they don't. And I was like, okay. So day of comes. People are there. They're very happy. The people that finished late, the early finish, doesn't matter. Is the food coming, right? And I hadn't heard back. And then she wrote back and said, well, it looks like they're not coming, but they're free to bring food in. I'm like, they're not going to bring food in. They're going to, what's it called?
Lean.
They're going to Lean Draft House. Now, I understand you're in the business of selling beer. Food is this other thing. However, not just for me, but as an experience, if you are telling people food is going to be there on these days, how can you possibly allow it to be? Because she said it wasn't the first time it's happened.
Yeah.
So how is that possibly acceptable that it's like this toss up that people show up or not?
Yeah. Yeah. It, it's, that's been one of the most difficult things, especially down there in the West End, because you know there's not a ton of other food options right around there.
There's none,
and so it's like, you know,
my friend Angel called it a food desert. You know Angel, right? We're in a food desert down here.
Yeah. So it is. We've got things in the works for trying to solve that and make that more consistent. I mean, the reality is we've just kind of had a musical chairs of like vendors who say they're going to be there, and then you know. They don't show up, and then
how do those people think they're going to fucking stay in business, though?
Right. Well, a lot of them are no longer. A lot of the ones, and probably the one that was, I think I know, remember that specific day, and I don't think they're a food vendor that's showing up anymore at Monday night. Like we're not allowing them to come anymore.
But why isn't it one strike and you're out? Because she apparently said that it's like three, and I'm like three. Like what business is that okay with a vendor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ever?
It's partly because we. You know, trying it has been a little bit of a struggle to get food vendors down there. Like, you know, when a lot of these food vendors can be somewhere on the east side, that's a lot more happening, and it's a little bit more of a struggle to get them down there to the West End.
Okay, but aren't there enough? I would think there's got to be more food trucks than breweries, and that like, yeah, you can't get the best of the best unless you have some huge event, but you could get somebody pretty good.
You can, but you'd be surprised. I mean, how some of them. You know, say, hey, if I don't hit this minimum, then I'm not coming back. Or if I, you know, if you can't guarantee me this certain number, and we can't necessarily guarantee them that they're going to sell a certain amount. We don't charge them to be there. But that's just kind of a reality of.
And isn't that better than how it is usually? If they go somewhere else, don't they usually have to pay either a permit fee or like give the host something?
I think so. I think at some places, yeah. I think it varies. So
If I had more time, I would take on that job. I would say, you know what? I want to make sure there's good food vendors here for my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I'll fucking get on the phones, but I don't have the time to make that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get someone like, you know, Okayaki, and they do a phenomenal job, and they create a whole scene and a vibe, and it's awesome.
Absolutely.
So there's just not enough people like them that show up when they say they're going to show up the food.
I believe you. You seem like a really good dude, and I'm shocked that it's that bad, that people are that. Again, just like, because obviously if they're doing it to you, they're doing it to other people. And it's like, who would ever use them again, ever?
I mean, talking to other breweries, we all have the exact
same issue.
Yeah. I mean, like that, even to the point where sometimes, you know, breweries will say, hey, I advertised this food truck is going to be there this day, and they just don't show up. And we're all kind of fighting that.
I wonder
same
if it's Georgia
battle.
Only, or if it's other, like other cities have food. Again, because like food trucks are like the fucking happening thing.
Yeah.
I mean, let me ask you this. So why can't you have the actual trucks, by the way?
So we can have trucks. But we generally have tried to, it's a little tougher. Like trucks can kind of get down there at the bottom of like near the Beltline side. But generally just with winter weather and everything, we've done more people doing inside, like a food cart inside. So that's just based on the weather, it's a little bit easier.
Is it because I can't walk into the lot with my glass?
Mm-mm. No, you can. Yeah, you can. And we actually have a spot where the trucks can pull up, but it's we have had some truck. We had a mix of trucks and then like carts or stands.
If I wanted, because I want to do this, so this big event I want to do in the fall, can we talk about it?
Sure.
And like, I'll book the trucks.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's honestly what we do a lot of times for people that are doing a big event. We say, hey, if you can, here 20 options, go haggle these guys and make them show up. So, because we just can't take responsibility for always making sure they do.
That's so disappointing. And I know that people are going, but I've seen it, right? The couple times I've been there now on a Saturday, once was a couple weeks ago with Okayaki, and once with my own thing, people are coming, they're bringing their kids, they're bringing their dogs, they plan on being there for a while, and they're going to get hungry.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We're working on a couple ways to solve it, either with consistent vendors or kind of creating like contracts where we say, you know, we're going to guarantee this number of people are there, but you're going to guarantee that you will be there during these times and things like that.
Right. And then of course they can still not show up if that happens.
True.
But it helps weed out the,
exactly,
the chaff,
yeah,
so to speak. All right, good. I'm glad we're going to solve this problem.
We will.
So how many cars can fit in that massive parking lot?
Like 800.
Is that because you plan on putting on concerts?
No, that was like literally that parking lot. I mean, it's the largest surface parking lot on the entire current
East Coast
belt, on the entire current and future Beltline.
Right.
And you know, we're not even scratching the surface of cars in it, and hopefully we'll never use all of it because people will actually use the Beltline and public transit.
Are you able to tell, like, when you look at a busy day like these, or just talking to your customers, who's coming, who's just the cool, I want to check out this new brewery, and who's living in the neighborhood that comes over?
Yes, I mean we've got a decent chunk of like neighbor regulars. I mean, there are some people in the neighborhood that are, they're there like 3 days a week.
Okay. We call that alcoholism. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. but generally, yeah. I mean, and I would say right now it's been more sort of weekdays are more people from the area, and then weekends are people from other parts of the city or tourists kind of coming in. So, right.
And what about the other place? What about the original?
Original place is, the original place we get more, it's a little more on the way, right? So if you're on, say, Northside Drive or Howell Mill, it's an easier sort of drop in, you know, on your way home from work or to something else.
Right.
Whereas the West End, it's a destination, right? It's not on the way to anything.
Right.
Except the airport, if you're on the MARTA and you see it. That's it.
Right. Well, like, kudos to you, by the way. I've watched the painting, mural slowly go up, making it easier and easier to find.
Yeah.
First, you have better, like little signs, like additional little signs, more little signs.
Yeah.
It's funny because I had an event, you know, my event, I put the address of the brewery, and a friend of mine goes, don't use that address.
Yeah, use White Street.
Don't use Lee Street, use White Street.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but if they get anywhere near there, they're going to see it. And sure enough, this woman called me and was like, I don't see it. I don't see it. I said, well, if you look around, everyone's parking. Like I had them come in and pull all the way down so that they can walk over to Rose Circle, which is where the race starts. And she's like, yeah, I'm just looking at some fence. And I knew right away, I'm like, you're at the other one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, that's why, like the other one. Like what street is
West,
that?
West Midtown. We call it that now just because that's,
Right. But anyhow, no, I think that's, and you got the little, I like the little Christmas light E setup, whatever you call that.
Yeah, the string lights.
What's the rule? What's the permit rule slash ETA of path going straight over your little ravine of disgusting water to the actual belt line?
So they're pouring concrete this week, and hopefully in 2 weeks the bridge will be done. So that's the current ETA. It's just it's a lot of back and forth with the belt line on these access agreements.
Right.
So but everything's approved. Construction has started.
Okay.
2 weeks. It'll be up.
That's gonna be a huge help.
Be a game changer.
Game changer, bro.
Yeah.
Because people like to run and do their thing.
Yeah. So what do you think about? So I mean, but as a neighbor, do you think it's been a good thing or a bad thing for the neighborhood?
I mean, it has to be a good thing. It feels like the billion-dollar question, you know, that I talk to Ryan and pretty much anybody about is how do we improve a neighborhood without it becoming Kirkwood, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what I said to Ryan was, you know, do those neighbors want 5 breweries and a hipster ice cream place? Is that what the neighborhood wants?
Yeah.
And I don't know the answer to that either. And I can tell you, I didn't see a lot of black faces when I was there. Right. That doesn't mean they're never there, but it looked pretty, you know, hipster-ish when I, couple times I've been there. And that's not, that's not your fault that that's who's choosing to come. But I don't, you know, I don't know what those, you know, I haven't gone door to door. I don't know what people say they want for the neighborhood or in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing I'd like to ask, because it seems like people that have lived there a long time, don't they actually own their houses by now? Because they've been there, their whole family's been there for like 50 plus years that they actually own that house.
I don't know.
It feels like that would be the case. So it's not like rents go up. It's just, somebody comes and offers you a big check and you get out.
Yeah, there's probably a decent number of renters too.
I am a renter, by the way.
Okay.
I'm a little nervous that they're going to keep jacking up my rent because now that the Beltline's finished.
Yeah. I will say we are still, you know, middle-aged hipster white guys and craft beer is a
middle-aged hipster white guy thing.
Exactly. But we have, I do think that there is an opportunity down there at kind of the garage in the West End to change some of that perception of craft beer. I know on our grand opening, we had like 2,500 people there, and it was, there was a beer writer, and he's like, I've been to 800 breweries across the country. And he's like, this is the most diverse crowd I've ever seen in a craft brewery in the United States.
Which, that's hopeful.
It's pretty cool. We had Nappy Roots played that night, which was awesome. And, but I do, it is not going to, we're dealing with one, it's craft beer, and, there's sort of the industry. We've got to change as an industry, I think. I think it's that's a bigger, broader question of like craft beer can't just attract middle-aged white dudes. They've got to branch out more from what it has been. So
do you, the other breweries that are coming in, I suppose you guys will be able to set up some cool like little mini tours like across the board there, and you know, I'm sure that's all coming, right?
Yeah. And I think it'll be a really neat little district when it's all done, because you know, it's less of the Pond City Market where you buy a $60 t-shirt.
Right.
It has like one word on it.
And I'll be able to say, like, I live in the West End. Where's that? You know where all those breweries are?
Yeah.
That's where I live.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I want to give you a chance to pimp some stuff, right?
Yeah.
So tell my beer drinking listeners, which I'm sure there are many, like what the new ones are, what the cool ones are. Like, tell me what's out there that they can come and enjoy when they come to. Oh, before I forget, speaking of white guys and ties, who's the logo inspiration?
So the logo inspiration, we originally had like a monk who looked like a drunk monk was like our logo. And basically,
because you guys were started for like Bible study.
Right. The monks, they just read the Bible and drank beer all day, and brewed beer. And but then we're like, all right, our name's Monday Night Brewing, like the monk, like we're a bunch of, like at the end of the day, like we're not brewing only Belgian beers. We're kind of three white dudes working our white collar jobs. Like, let's not try to pretend like we're, you know, Colorado whitewater rafting brewery in the middle of Atlanta. And so we actually, my business partner, Jonathan, calls me up one morning. He's like, Hey, I got a new idea for the logo. It's like a Saturday morning. He's like, I'll be at your house in 10 minutes, put a coat and tie on and no pants. I was like, no pants. He didn't actually say that part, but he showed up, he snapped a picture. He was like, raise your arm and like literally put it in his computer, created like a vector file. And he's like, bam, here's our new logo. It's just sort of a guy with a loosened tie saying, I'm going to enjoy a good beer like on a weekday. So the weekends are overrated. It's a little bit tongue in cheek, but it's also this idea of like, that was actually kind of fun about Mondays, is people were enjoying beer on a Monday, not to get hammered, but to like enjoy the community and the flavor of the beer. And so that's kind of what it symbolizes. So it's actually me.
That's awesome.
When I had hair.
That's awesome. So since the law changes, have you had many like, we have to cut this guy off situations?
Not as many as you would think. I mean, I think people are, and when we, you know, we're only open, 10 p.m. is the latest we're open. We're not doing the, you know, the late night.
For that reason?
Exactly. That's one of the reasons, you know.
It's so just, because the cost benefit of keeping it open is just not worth dealing with rowdy people that might break stuff?
Yeah, and I think you get the better, the pre 10 p.m. customers are the people you actually want to serve as customers. The post 10 p.m. is, you know, it's a different crowd, so.
Seems like you thought of everything, my friend. No. Well, again, so before we get you to pimp the latest flavors, let's talk about marketing. So other than giant, you know, building that I see that I drive by and, you know, I assume you do lots of social stuff, social media, Facebook and whatnot. How does one successfully market a brewery?
So we rely mostly on word of mouth and on, you know, sharing our story on social media. We've, one example, like down there in the West End, we did this thing when we opened. We said, we're like, all right, we need to, like, how are we going to get people from other parts of Atlanta to come down here and see that this is something cool and special? We ended up doing this thing where we said, we're going to give away free events with free beer, free staffing to nonprofits in Atlanta. We called it 100K in 100 days. We're going to raise, and our goal is to raise $100,000 in our first 100 days of being open. And it was crazy. We ended up giving away 30 events to nonprofits. We had almost, I want to say that the total was somewhere close to like 15,000 people come down there over the course of that 100 days, tied to, you know, these nonprofit events, and ended up raising $280,000.
That's awesome.
Nonprofits. Yeah. And it was a great, it was kind of like, right, we don't have big marketing budgets. We can't do advertising, but we have a space and we have beer, and how can we leverage that to bring people in and kind of share our story? So that's it's so much fun marketing for like brewery stuff. It's so much fun. You can, you know, we have a beer that is coming out next month, and we were sitting around like, what are we going to call this? And I was like, and it's a golden ale, and we're like, we want sort of sailboats on it and stuff. And I'm like, well, how about we call it I'm on a Boat?
And like the song.
And Jonathan's like, I'm sure some brewery's already taken that name. Sure enough, no brewery's taken that name. And we called it I'm on a Boat. So,
but do you have to, does it have to be like non-trademarked or whatever?
Generally you want to,
like, well, anybody can sell a pepperoni pizza or a quote unquote meat lovers.
Yeah, exactly. You want to make sure no one's used it in a widespread manner or has trademarked it. Those are the big things you're checking for. If, like, a brew pub in Missoula, Montana one time had a beer that they made 2 gallons of. That
right.
They
all right. About. So what are the best sellers now? What do you got coming up? And talk about that stuff.
Best sellers. We have our newish pale ale, Han Brolo, which is like a easy, kind of easy drinking 4.8% pale ale, but it's got a lot of hops in sort of the flavor profile. And that's just a delicious one. And then this one we just launched, that I brought you today that you're not going to drink. It's called Beyond the Clouds.
But somebody will enjoy
it. Someone will enjoy
it. I will not put them in the trash. I will give them away. Yeah.
So this is a Brett IPA. This is one of the ones we made down at the garage. And it's fermented with Brettanomyces, which is unlike a normal beer yeast, which is Saccharomyces. Not to get like
I'm sure there's some beer people that are drooling right now.
And so it kind of creates these sort of the yeast kind of creates a lot of like pineapple and fruity tropical notes, and it's very different.
We're gonna take a picture of this.
Yeah,
keep talking. I'm gonna take a pretty
Friday night, we've got, this is our fourth year doing it, prom night at the brewery. So we do like a cheesy adult prom, basically. And that's the fun stuff that we get to do as part of this job and part of doing this brewery.
I'm trying to get the sweet depth effect where you're without me.
No, you want me in it.
Okay. I want you in it so that you're kind of faded on the mic.
Yeah.
I've not mastered the depth effect.
Dude, the depth effect is amazing. Like every picture of like your kids, all of a sudden you're like, man, it looks amazing.
On the 10, it's beyond amazing. This is the 7 plus or 7S or whatever the fuck I have. Lost my train of thought. So this is a very adorable logo. I will describe it to the people. It actually looks like a bit of like a wine bottle.
Yeah.
And the logo is some giraffes with their necks in the clouds, and they're wearing ties. I guess that's the kind of like the Monday Night Brew tie.
Exactly.
But they're not black. They're multi-spotted.
Yes.
I don't even know what a pale ale is versus a regular beer.
Yeah. It's basically like a notch, like a lager is usually the lightest sort of beer, like the Bud Light, all those are lagers. And then a pale ale would be the next notch up from that. Like think of like Sierra Nevada pale ale or Sweetwater 420 is a pale ale. And that's kind of the big categories, but
yeah. Right. So I drank a hops coffee thing the other day, and I didn't know that it was going to taste exactly like a beer. So I was kind of bummed about it because I don't like to drink.
Sound delicious.
I just wasn't thinking, and I was like, what's in this? I'm like, there's no alcohol. Right. And I looked at the bottle and I took it. It was like sipping a Guinness essentially.
Yeah.
Which I actually used to enjoy. Black and Tan was kind of my thing way back in the day when I was a young lad. Anyhow. So have you, so you have had those or you haven't had those?
I haven't had a hops coffee, no.
Yeah.
But it sounds gross to me.
It was gross.
I like coffee and I like beer. I don't necessarily know if I want to mix the two.
How often does a place like yours, how often do you need to come out with new flavors to keep the people interested?
The masses. That's changed a lot. So we've gone from like a market where it was all about have a few brands, build those brands to now, people are like, what's the flavor of the week? Give me new, American consumerism at its best. Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of shifted. I mean, we're coming out with a new beer, once or twice a month down at the garage, smaller batches, limited release, that, you know, like this, we just packaged up 2 weeks ago, and then we launched another one 3 weeks after that.
And who is doing the brewing?
It's we've got a mix. We got a kind of pretty broad team of people, and a person will kind of have an idea, and then they'll, you know, kind of noodle it. We'll green light it, and then they'll take it and kind of run with it. So we've got, I mean, 5 or 6 different people on our team that are kind of developing beers at any given time.
But then, who actually stirs the soup?
I was stirring one yesterday. Yeah. I was actually brewing up a batch yesterday.
What's the term? Chef? Brewmeister? What's the...
Yeah, brewmaster or brewmaster. Brewer. Yeah, but really it's just brewer. We've got a team of about 5 or 6 brewers.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, cool. Are you ready for the Atlanta podcast quiz?
Absolutely.
Okay. Are you familiar with how this works? I think you listened to an episode recently.
Yes, I'm not sure it was at the very end. Might not have gotten to that.
Might not have gotten to that. Yeah. Well, I didn't do it with Ryan because I hadn't born it yet, but now it's it's a part of the show. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What is your go-to order at the Waffle House?
At the Waffle House, it's the sandwich with the Texas toast.
I think
like
there's a couple
like a breakfast sandwich with like egg, bacon, cheese on the Texas toast. I'm not sure if it's one of their specific menu items, but that's what I get.
And how do you take your hash browns?
Smothered, covered, and diced.
Okay. Diced is tomatoes?
Tomatoes, yes.
Excellent. What is your favorite restaurant in Atlanta?
So it doesn't get a lot of hype, but Georgia Grill. Have you ever been there or heard of it?
Where's that?
It's on Peachtree, kind of as you're coming in from like Midtown into Buckhead, and it looks like a sports bar in like a strip mall, but it's Georgia's in Georgia O'Keeffe, and it's the southwestern food that's just like unbelievable.
I will have to look that up because I've not heard of that.
Yeah, it's been around for like 20 years and it's just kind of tucked back in this corner and it's really good.
Okay. Rank these in importance to you. You ready?
Yes.
Hawks, Falcons, Braves, United.
I will go United.
I knew it.
Falcons.
Hipster.
Yeah. United, Falcons, Hawks, and then Braves. They're dead to me now.
Because they moved?
To Cobb.
Love it. Love it. There's some very succinct themes on this show.
Yeah.
And most of my in-town guests put the Braves last, and they also hipster put the United first.
Yeah.
Although not all. Are sharks dinosaurs?
Well, I read lots of books about the Megalodon with my boys. And I think it is kind of it's a dinosaur shark. So I think yes.
Okay. What's the best concert you've ever seen in Atlanta? The best show? And what was the venue? Who was the act and what was the venue?
It was Eddie's Attic, and it was this band called The Rescues. And it's kind of poppy-ish music, but they're all just super talented solo musicians that every once in a while get together and do this band with all of them together called The Rescues. And that venue, it's just like everything, it's so intimate and you can just hear, and you're sitting, you know, three rows back from the person who's playing, and that was probably the best one.
Mm-hmm. What's the best festival in Atlanta?
Best festival in Atlanta. That's a tough one. I'm not a huge festival person. When we started the brewery, I was just working brewery festivals constantly, and it gets so old. But there used to be a really good beer festival called the Hottoberfest, but it's gone now. And that was my favorite because it was kind of one of those just a great beer festival that brought in stuff from all over.
And where was that one?
It kind of jumped around. It was down, just south of 20, that development before it became like a big development. And I can't think of the name of it right now. I think it was in East Atlanta one year. They kind of jumped around, and then it was in Old Fourth Ward Park, like the right after they built the park.
Right. Well, here's something that I actually should be asking that I haven't been asking, but I should ask people this, right? What's your favorite local beer?
Favorite local beer?
Currently, because I assume it might change for you.
Yeah, it does. I'm always kind of jumping around to new stuff, but there is a... I just had this more recently. There's a beer from Three Taverns that they only release it every once in a while, but it's a beer that's brewed with like a wild yeast that they got from this first snowpocalypse, and then they've kind of kept cultivating that wild yeast. It's called Inceptus, and it's really good.
Who should I have on this podcast next?
So I think you should have, there's a guy, Aaron Fortner. He's an urban planner. He runs an urban planning group here in town. That's, I think some of the stuff you're touching on with like Ryan Gravel and thinking about the city and how the city develops, I think he'd be a fascinating person to interview, especially in light of this city is changing so much and there's a lot going on. And he's one of these guys that I just love, like, the times I've talked to him, hearing his perspective on the city and where it's going. There, he's part of this a group of people that's helping define like changes to the city code and to kind of our urban planning framework and really some of the kind of, as Atlanta starts to look at what are the core values of the city and where are we going. Like, he'd be a good person.
That's a great question. What are the core values of our city?
So I don't think they've released all of them yet, but I think they've sort of said that they are based, the group is basing it on sort of Martin Luther King's like beloved community and this idea of people from all over kind of coming together towards a common cause and living together. And so they're going to start thinking about what does that mean? Like, what does that mean to the West End to have that as a framework for how the West End develops and how the city develops? And I think there's going to be some interesting stuff that comes out. And one of the things I agree with that Ryan says is that like these next 5 to 10 years are going to be crucial for sort of shaping the direction of the city over the next 20 to 30 years as we get all these people.
I think that's a perfect place to stop.
Yeah.
It's high five. Good job, dude.
Thanks, man.
And that's a wrap on this episode. Listen, be like Patrick. Be like Jimmy. Drop a note. I'd love to hear from you. I promise to write back. I'm Matt B. Davis on all the platforms. I'm easy to find. Also, ATL Podcast on Instagram is fun to watch. You'll see the guests we have coming up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hey, shout out to Lakehouse Coffee, new sponsor. Going to be hearing a lot from them. Love you, miss you, mean it. I have got to run.